Hello and welcome. I'm Sam Harris, and it is my true honor and pleasure to host you here on the Growth Mindset podcast. I talk to amazing individuals about how they achieve their dreams and break down the strategies it takes to lead explosive tech businesses to being paid to travel the world. I deep dive into topics such as Bitcoin and fintech, or just how to get stuff done, with the goal of increasing our own collective wisdom and making us all happier, healthier, and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? Today on the podcast, we have Sherman Lee. I knew him already as the founder of Rocco AI, but it turns out he's also the founder of Raven Protocol, a new blockchain cryptocurrency that's hitting the market sometime this year, maybe. He writes for Forbes and Business Insider and Huffington Post, which is pretty cool. And he also founded GoodAudience.com, a social media consultancy agency. So it's kind of funny because in the episode, he actually talks about the fact that he doesn't really like telling people everything about himself, or like asking for details on like what other people are, and just sort of going with the flow and being like, oh, this person's cool, I'll be friends with this person, versus going on like more official, oh, this person has X and Y properties, so they should be my friend. And that's kind of how me and Sherman met, because I knew he was founder at Rocco AI, but we never really spoke about it, and we just kind of hung out. And now it turns out he does all these things, and I never asked him about them because I didn't know he did them. So I would have gone more into blockchain and how to write for people like Forbes in the podcast had I known about it in advance, but hadn't prepared for that, sorry. So we went more into social media and life hacking, and still covered lots of interesting stuff. So don't be worried, the podcast is still awesome. But maybe there's a good reason for me to talk to him again about blockchain and writing, because pretty cool that he's done all these things. So anyway, now that I've explained what's missing from the podcast, I hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast, because it is actually really good and he's a really cool guy, and I think you'll find him pretty funny. So instead of doing a normal sound check, I chose to ask Sherman what his most memorable life event was first, because that was very logical at the time, and it's actually quite a funny story, so do enjoy.
My first memory ever in my whole life that I can ever think of is at a McDonald's in Oakland, California. I was probably, between 3 or 4 years old. I can't really picture this time, but it was in one of those play structures back when it was, you know, still metal, you know, that plastic stuff. So I climbed up into this hamburger. You can actually go inside of that hamburger. I stuck my head through the metal bars. I was stuck there. I couldn't get my head back out. At least not alone. I started crying. My parents came to save me, and I guess I actually ended up getting my head out for some reason. But that pretty much sums up how I jump into things. I don't, like, when I think something's a really good idea for whatever reason, whether it's bad or good, or I just get excited about it, I'll just jump in there and I'll stick my head through in there and kind of figure things out. I don't know if it was, if that was the actual cause of me being that way, or if it's just I've always been that way. That's the first memory I've ever had as a human in this world.
Cool. That's nice. Thanks, man. Sherman, welcome to the Growth Mindset podcast, where I interview the favorite people I meet on the planet and other people who I'm lucky enough to somehow get on to do it.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So to start off with, how do you introduce yourself to people at a dinner party?
Okay, that's... Well, first, I'm an introvert, so I'm probably the worst person to... I don't introduce myself probably at all. Just
hi. Your wife introduces you.
I'm Sherman, and that's pretty much it. You know, most people say like things like, "Oh, okay, well, what do you do?" And I'm actually not curious. I don't like that as a starting point. It feels like you're just measuring up against each other. At least when you first meet someone, which I think it is kind of wrong because I love connecting with people at all different levels. So it could be some random guy on the street who's collecting dollar bills or coins or whatever to fund his travels. And I have absolutely no judgment towards that. So I'm more interested in connecting along those personal levels. Yeah. Like, okay, cool. What are you interested in? You like, hiking in the mountains of Hong Kong? What are your favorite trails and those kinds of things? And those, that's like when you reach into those conversations and you have those kind of similar interests, I feel like that's a better time to dive deeper into who that person is in terms of where do you work in Hong Kong? Those kinds of things.
Sure.
That's my approach.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. I remember first sort of thought about it when I think I got to university, and like in the first week you had the same conversation with so many people. I was just like, I'm not even telling anyone like which course I'm doing or what, and just started ignoring people when they're talking to me. And I basically, I could sit next to someone and like a lecture and just make jokes about something that was going on. I'd be like, yeah, this person's cool.
Yeah.
And just didn't really care where they're from or what, because I just knew I wouldn't remember anyway.
Yeah.
And but on that note, hopefully people will remember, or for the rest of the podcast, at least have the context. What is your business and what is your role?
I'm one of the co-founders of a company called Rocco, and it is a AI-powered social media marketer that helps you post on things like Twitter and Facebook. So what we want to do is be able to create unique content for a brand, much better than a human can. And at the stage we're at right now, it's about collecting all the data so that we can train machine learning models to fulfill that vision. About 300 clients use us for curating content to post on their social media channels today. That's the biggest value we provide as we build out the AI and the machine learning models.
Okay, cool. So is that completely automated, in like you give it your Facebook, your Twitter, and it just posts for you? Or is it, because I've only recently seen the Slack integration, like it just tells you things on Slack, and then if you like it, you can post it yourself.
Right. So it's not completely automated, although people have asked us for that, to just automatically let the content loose on all these channels. But right now, we follow an approval process. So Rocco will suggest that content and ask a human if they would actually want to post that on their Twitter or want to post that on Facebook. And we purposely do that because we want to protect the brand. And we also want to learn from whether or not they choose a specific content to post.
Yeah. Okay. Have you thought about employing someone within Rocco to like verify things so that you could then just sort of more quickly let people just post straight away?
By verifying things, do you mean
that it doesn't have swear words in for this brand, or it's as in having someone that kind of takes semi-ownership of what the brand voice is of different companies and just checking so it's in blending machine and man to deliver the experience that a Rocco client has.
Right. So those are things we definitely have thought about. So I came from a social media agency called Good Audience. And essentially what we did was run social media marketing campaigns for brands. And I think we've worked with over 3,000 clients doing that. So with Rocco, we wanted to take the absolute extreme approach on the other end, where a machine will do the majority of the work. And so we see it as these things as two ends of the spectrum, where at some point in the world, we don't know when, the social media agencies, the humans creating all the social media content, maybe even the interns, they will be replaced. But as we approach that actual future, we want the humans behind the brand to use a tool like Rocco to augment their workforce. So we would rather have the humans on that side approving things rather than us hiring humans to do some of that work, which would very quickly blend into being a social media agency again.
So you said your role is co-founder. Who is your other co-founder?
The co-founder is Shannon, and she's also my wife.
Nice. How long had you known her before you guys started this?
About 7 years.
Okay. Were you already married when you started?
Yeah, we were already married when we started Rocka.
Cool. How was that in terms of a strain on the relationship?
Well, it'll be 2 a.m. and she can see me on Facebook. And she'll have comments like, hey, that doesn't look like code. So it's good. It's good and bad. The bad is that we're always working.
Yeah.
The good part is we get to spend a lot of time together because we're working on this project. Whereas in a lot of relationships, especially if you're in a startup, the time you spend together is on the low side.
Yeah, it's the hard one. Yeah, it's interesting. There you kind of do want to spend as much time as you can with your partner.
Yeah.
And it can be really hard when you're doing startups to like share moments and enjoy it. And it's also hard to get people to understand what it is you're doing all day sometimes. And then like if you go traveling, it's hard to really tell people exactly what it's like and to ever get them to understand your inside jokes other than the person you travel with. And but yeah, it's kind of the same for business. Like my mum loves to hear what I get up to, but she still doesn't really know exactly. And yeah, so that's cool. Then one day I'll try starting a business with my wife, perhaps. But then my parents actually, they tried doing one together. They found it really difficult. And we're like, you know what? I love you. And because of that, I'm not going to work with you because I'm not cool. Has there been any major conflicts because of working together? Or do you think?
Oh, yeah, sure. We get into disagreements like any healthy co-founder relationship is to getting into those debates. So there's often times where she feels very strongly about a direction or a vision. Mm. And I come from an engineering background, so I'm sometimes a bit more realistic about what can be completed, the time it takes, can we take a shortcut? And for the most part, when she sticks to her guns, she ends up being right. So it'll be things like, okay, we shouldn't release this to the public yet because it'll hurt our brand. Like, what if they have a bad experience about this? And so when she pushes me in that respect, I go back, it may take an hour or 2 hours and kind of think about it and come up with a different solution that kind of meets both of our objectives.
Okay, cool. Do you feel like one of you wears the pants more in the business and one more at home, or is it always quite even everywhere?
So she definitely makes the majority of decisions around the home. So, family life, right?
Yeah.
I think most moms are the CEOs of home, mm-hmm. which I think is an extremely, extremely hard job, especially with children. Mm. And it is also a very thankless job because, you talk to any mom there,
then kids just kind of expect it because they don't know anything else. It's always there. You don't go out of your way to thank your mom for being mom because they're already mom. So yeah, you should thank her more.
True. I definitely need. Thank you, Shannon.
Big shout out there. Whoop, whoop. Cool. And so you do more of the decisions on the business, or it's just more equal there?
It's definitely more equal on that side. I do a lot of the driving forward, thinking of new ideas, thinking of new partnerships, thinking a bit further into the future. And she's the one who brings me back down into the world with being realistic And from there, we come to a good compromise for both things that is good for the future, but also is possible in the short term and delivering value for our clients.
So you now have about 300 customers. How did you scale up? How did you find your first customers?
Well, first I would say, you know, we didn't do a ton of work in trying to get customers, because what we want to do is work with the early adopters, people who understand that AI and machine learning, it takes time to train and learn from that. And they're willing to work with us closely to get to that vision. But there's a few ways where we got our initial customers. It's through our network, people that run different companies who are willing to try our product out, and we also do content marketing. We talk to people on things like Twitter. I'm a contributor to things like Huffington Post or these kinds of outlets. It's easy just to kind of get a quick outreach out and to get those customers. We've done like crazy things where it's like growth hacks too. If we want to just like get a quick 10 people to try something new out, you can easily just hop on like AngelList and for example, when we were in the Zroth accelerator, I had this idea where I just wanted to get a few hundred or so followers for our AngelList profile. I don't know for what good reason. Well, actually, I do know the reason. The Zroth batch had a page on AngelList, and there was a ranking for every single company. Yeah. I just wanted to be on the top of that list. That was the only reason. just for fun. So what
a really useful metric for your business there. Not a vanity metric.
totally just stroking the ego.
Yeah.
Cool. So what I did was just start following people on AngelList and sending them a message and say, hey, I want to give you this account to Rocco. If you'll just follow our page, I would really appreciate the support. And so there was actually two benefits to that. We quickly rose to the top of the list on AngelList. We're number one for now, absolutely no reason other than people are willing to follow that page. The second benefit was we actually got feedback from people who tried out Rocco. So all unintentionally.
Cool. If they find just putting like a little extra step into social media makes a big difference, like talking to people. But like anytime someone adds me on LinkedIn, I always reply, hi, thanks for adding me. Why have you added me? And someone come back with like really good, like, oh, I just saw your profile and I really wanted to talk to you about this. And like half of them probably make up bullshit, but like they come up with a reason to be talking to me, and at least it becomes a contact that actually I can do something with. I just have like a bunch of random people that added me that it's pointless. And yeah, do you use any bots for like growing your following? Or?
For my personal accounts, I don't use any of those things currently. Obviously I've played with all that stuff in the past, and when you as a growth marketer, so. I'll give you some context, actually. I've been the first company that I've ever started is it's called Good Audience that turned into a social media agency. We actually started off as a Twitter spam bot. What we did was automatically favorite tweets when favoriting used to be called favoriting. Now it's called likes. So we automatically favorited tweets in the hopes that people would follow you back. And back in, I think it was 2013, that worked extremely, extremely well. So brands would use us and they would get tons and tons of followers. And we even got funded by Techstars with this piece of software.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was we got shut down by Twitter, maybe four or five different times. Our customers got quite upset. You know, there'd be a period of 1 to 2 weeks where absolutely nothing was working until Twitter restored our API access. And we tried to kind of just hide from them, and four or five times, and they kept on banning us, you know. And as we got more customers onto this thing, more people, or the faster we would just get banned again, because, you know, we're making more API requests. And then we made a hard choice from there. It was like, do we continue being this underground tool and try to avoid being Twitter, avoid being caught by Twitter? Or do we create a legitimate business that could be beneficial to them and work closer to them? And so we ended up following their terms of services.
Okay. But still doing similar style sort of growth hacks of like liking people and things, or
that was the first step. We would present them a list of people that they could potentially follow, or we would build them a list of all these different tweets of conversations people were having based on keywords or topics, and then it was up to the user to perform that action. So it was no longer automated. And the struggle there was, you know, we were up against all these other tools like Follower Walk or Audience. And the major struggle was, you know, from our customers was, okay, this is cool. I could use you or these other tools. But, you know, you guys actually, you know, you gave us a lot of social media strategy on what to actually do and how to use these tools. So why don't you actually just do the work for us? Initially, we were kind of against that. Like, you know, like, no, just keep using our tool. Why would we do this work for you? And they said, no, you don't understand. Like, we're willing to pay you more money. We just want your expertise. So we went down this path of being an on-demand service for social media marketing. The clients started wanting us to do a bit more stuff. And over the years, we ended up just being in an agency. So we never became a unicorn or anything like that. We were able to get more clients linearly. We worked with brands like Kettle Brand Chips, HomeAway.com, San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank, and these really cool brands that wanted to get social media done.
Okay. And so you decided that was a terrible idea and gave it all up?
No, it's still running to this day.
All right.
Yeah. But I would say intellectually, I don't find, you know, running an agency challenging. And along the way, I started digging into machine learning and artificial intelligence. My background actually was doing 5 years of machine learning at Yahoo on the content platform. I scaled it. I helped them scale it from 0 to 600 million users. And I just always had this intellectual curiosity of how to solve problems. And in 2016, Tack Lowe, who is the managing director of Zroth.ai, he was also one of the investors in Good Audience through Techstars, he calls me and he says, hey, I'm starting this thing in Asia to do a machine learning and artificial intelligence accelerator. I think that you could probably do something around social media. And I was like, wow, what is in Hong Kong and what is in Asia? You sound kind of just crazy right now. This sounds like a bit of a pipe dream. So what ended up happening was, he ended up calling me again, on Facebook, whatever, just pinging me like, hey, we're actually making progress here. And, you know, these are the different investors who said they're willing to commit to this fund. He has all these different mentors and these different venture partners. They're from Skype and, the actual founders of Skype and, you know, all these crazy things. Like, wow, you've actually built up a team of people who could really make building out this accelerator happen. And And so that's how I ended up in Hong Kong. I was in San Francisco before. Funny story, actually. I didn't even realize that you did not have to move to Hong Kong for the accelerator.
Wait, so you're the only person that moved? Oh, bro. Oh, my God.
So we ended up just packing up all of our things, renting out our home, and moving to Hong Kong.
That's awesome, though. But glad you did it.
Yeah, it was a really fun journey.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you got like a good flat here. It seems like life is fun. So you're happy you moved to Hong Kong then?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Anyway, so you spoke a bit about entrepreneurialism and doing things that kind of you're more passionate about. So what would you say is your big drive? Like, what motivates you?
Well, so there's the first thing that really motivates me is being able to provide for my family. I think that's the most important thing. And so making sure that they're taken care of is obviously a very easy motivator. The second one is purely on an intellectual basis. So I'm one of those people that were sitting on the internet in Yahoo in 1995, and when there wasn't really much to do except log onto this directory and start browsing web pages. But I was there doing that for hours on end, clogging up the telephone line on something ridiculous like a 14.4K modem. My parents, their friends would keep trying to call. And it was so bad that they had to get me a pager and give out that phone number so that if one of my parents' friends wanted to reach them, they would just page me. So I would get off the internet. I
totally forgot that you had to like swap the internet. That was the thing where you still have to like turn the internet off so we could phone my nan and things. Man, I hope that completely wiped that from my memory until now. That's cool. Thanks. Anyway, carry on.
So I was there building websites, learning HTML, on AngelFire or GeoCities way, way back in the day, and being part of all these different web rings. So that the intellectual curiosity of just always living in that future and knowing that there's something there that the mass hasn't really adopted yet is what really excites me. And being able to help shape that future is really cool.
Then, so is Zeroth, what was it about Zeroth that made the whole startup thing good? Like, what did Zeroth give you that you couldn't have got from just doing it yourself?
The key thing is the people that is involved in the community. And things like the absolute experts in artificial intelligence being willing to sit down with you for a coffee for 30 minutes or an hour and talking to you about the specific problems that you're facing. I think that is the biggest value that they provide. And these are people that who have built really big, successful companies. Some of their net worth may be $1 billion or hundreds of million dollars or whatever it is. And what's really cool is they're willing to give their time to you as, you know, either mentors or venture partners and help you solve a problem. And that's really helpful because it feels like, you know, they're on your team. And they've been in that situation before, and they're willing to either help you figure it out or introduce you to someone else in their network that can help you shortcut a problem. And that's really cool because working by yourself on a problem, bang your head against the wall, is really hard.
So did you ever do any startups by yourself, or have you always had co-founders?
I've never done a startup by myself. I've tried starting projects and things like that, never panned out. I would first start by myself, but what I realized pretty quickly is that either I'm smart enough just to know that I can't do it alone, or I just enjoy working with other people. It just makes things a lot easier, I think, because someone else is better than you at something, and it's good to have that help.
What do you think will be the main changes in the next 5 years in social media?
So One thing I find really interesting right now is a social network called Steemit, and it's a decentralized social network. And so the people that are posting on this platform, the reward isn't in the number of likes they get, or the number of comments, or the number of engagements. The reward is an actual monetary value. And people can give them that value by upvoting a piece of content that they've created, uploaded onto their platform. With social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter today, while they're all really good, I probably owe a lot of my personal brand to Twitter in itself. But they, by being a centralized platform, they actually own the full control of who gets to see the actual content. And basically, if you're a brand on Facebook, if you don't put any money into their advertising platform, the majority of your content on your Facebook business page will not be seen by your followers, which is problematic.
Okay, do you think Steam is going to be like the next wave or something like that?
I think there's room for more social media platforms, because right now what if you think back about being a marketer, yeah, it's all about finding ways to tell your story to the world and cutting through that noise. And so this is really great for very large corporations and brands who have millions and millions of dollars to deploy onto the Facebook advertising platform.
Yeah.
But I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm a very big fan of startups, and all my friends are basically founders. They don't have those million-dollar budgets. So I believe in a much more fair system. You know, it doesn't even have to be fair, right? They figure out growth hacks of how to get around existing systems to make sure that they're getting their message across. So I think there's room for other platforms to come into this world where the community has a huge say of what gets to be seen. Reddit is a good example of this. It's the community deciding what to upvote. They're deciding who gets to see what. But with Facebook, you don't really get to decide, right? I mean, you know, your initial followers, you know, they can like it and whatnot, and it helps get that content in front of more people. But I have a suspicion that the Facebook advertising platform is designed for you to spend more money, not save money.
Sure. So how do you currently go about educating new users and getting people to use you as a company? Like, do you do Facebook marketing or?
Yeah, I mean, we do Facebook, we do Twitter, but my favorite way of educating someone is having that one-on-one conversation with them. And this is all part of you know, developing an onboarding experience. You can obviously scale this, but there's nothing better than having a human touch to kind of show how to use your product and educate them on how to actually use it. And, you know, even if it's just over email, you give them exact commands to type or exactly steps to use a product. And it builds that relationship with them where they kind of trust you. And I think this is really important as a young startup, because they have a lot of options in the world of what they could potentially use. There's tons of other social media tools which could, you know, which they could potentially use. But if you actually help guide them and you take the time to do that as a human, they highly, highly appreciate that. At least that's the feedback that I've been given from our users.
Why did you choose to learn, what did you study?
I studied computer science. Okay.
And that was from your history of hacking away as a kid, just being like, this is so cool?
Kind of. I've been on a computer since I was probably four years old or so. Wow. I was lucky enough where my parents got us an Apple IIe.
Nice.
And I would just sit there all day sticking in these different floppy disks.
Yeah.
And looking at this screen that was just all green pixels. But I found that absolutely fascinating. But I used that computer for a long time. And then I got a Macintosh at some point and connected a modem to it, and was on the internet, Yahoo and AOL and all these things. But initially, when I went to college, I didn't have an intention to major in computer science. I just started, I was just kind of exploring. My parents actually wanted me to do accounting or business or something like that, you know, like a proper good student who was you know, really good at math. I took my first programming class. And there was a very deep enjoyment of making a piece of program just kind of work and run. I think one of my favorite classes was actually assembly. I think it was it was an assembly language. I was just getting into like the real guts of things and moving these addresses around, doing these jumps and going to a specific part of a program was kind of cool to me. Mm. And so that's how I decided to major in computer science at UC Berkeley.
Okay, cool. Then along the way, have you had anything that you were told like you wouldn't be able to do or that you'd be bad at and you sort of felt like it was hard, but you kind of use some of the growth mindset kind of philosophy and was like, I'm gonna make myself do this, or
So I would say, as an introverted engineer starting my first company, I was absolutely terrible at selling something. We were selling a SaaS product. People would say, hey, do you have some time to hop on a call and tell me a little bit more about what you do? And, you know, before these phone calls, my hands would sweat. I'd be really nervous. I had no idea what to say. And I had no idea how to sell anything, how to sell this product. When they asked me questions of what you do, I didn't really know how to describe it very clearly or succinctly. Or I didn't even know how to ask them to actually put in their credit card. I was very afraid.
Yeah.
So we ended up just offering the product for free for the longest time. And what actually pushed me to, you're talking about the growth mindset. I actually had a very big forcing function. Was if I didn't figure out how to sell this product, we would be out of cash and I would have to get a job. And coming from probably about 6 years after college in the corporate world, I was not ready to, I had no desire to go get a job. And I learned how to sell a product. I reached out to people who were, VP of sales at different SaaS companies, who were people who were doing B2B. And I just asked them like, hey, I have no idea. I don't know what I'm doing in sales. I have no idea, how I should be speaking to people. I have no idea how to build a pipeline. And to my surprise, they were actually very willing to help. And one of the first guys that was willing to help me, it's pretty funny how I met him. His name is Taff Love. And he was, I believe, either an account executive or something like that at Lead Genius. And this was a company that pretty much just sells leads to you. I think they were a Y Combinator company. And it was really funny how I met him. I got an I got an email from him. And it said something like, hey, we're connected through this mutual thing on LinkedIn. I work for a company called Lead Genius and we could help you find more clients or whatnot. I was like, yeah, that actually sounds like something that I do need help with. And so I replied to the email and he's like, yeah, let's meet for a lunch. I'll take you out to lunch. So, you know, their office is in Berkeley, California. So I show up to this, I think it was a Brazilian place. And, you know, I talk to him and he's like, so, I actually had no idea you existed until you replied to my email. And that kind of just blew me away. I was like, what? What do you mean? He's like, yeah, all that stuff was automated. I'm like, what do you mean it was automated? He's like, oh, well, we scrape the internet for companies and contacts. We get their email address. We set up all these automated campaigns. And then we just hit play and these emails automatically get sent out. And I don't really know of anyone until they reply. I'm like, holy shit, that is fucking amazing. I didn't know that is possible. He's like, yeah, well, okay. So it sounds like you're not really a good fit for Lead Genius today, but I'll help you set up your email campaigns and I'll help you figure out how to sell this stuff. I was like, wow, that would be incredibly helpful. So what he did was, he created this Google Doc with an action plan and he gave me my first set of emails. I think it was probably a list of 500 or so realtors in Austin and Dallas. He's like, yeah, have fun with it. And he even helped me develop my first campaign. He told me the tools to use. We uploaded it on this tool called Quickmail and I hit play on it. And what do you know? These realtors actually responded to me and said, yeah, I'm interested in your social media services. And so I would start having phone calls with them. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, but I had hope in learning how to do this. Yeah. And I would go back to Taff and say like, what would you say in a phone call? I have no idea what to do this. He's like, well, the first thing is, don't try to just sell them on something. Actually show them that you can provide some sort of value and that you have a solution to an actual existing problem that they have. So these conversations was just an exploration of, how they were approaching social media and figuring out if we were even a good fit for them. And that is how I learned sales. It's just jumping into it without having any knowledge and being absolutely terrified and afraid of speaking to a prospect on the phone.
Ooh, nice. That's fun. That's something I actually kind of had some similar issues with when I first started trying to like make sales and things. And I'm terrified of telephones when I was younger.
Yeah.
When I first started. And yeah. Nice. Thanks. And do you have any lessons that you learned like the hard way, that something that you just had to get wrong and kind of anything that you sort of screwed up majorly and now you're a much wiser and better person for?
At a high level, I used to think that I would be able to learn everything on my own, whether it's doing sales or doing marketing or coding this piece of thing. I thought I could do it all. But what I realized was it's much easier if you can actually work with another human on that problem, because they already have this specific set of knowledge on how to approach something in their head, and they can help you quickly shortcut that and help you make progress. And so the sales example was one of those. Initially, I tried to learn sales on my own, but like it was making tons of mistakes.
Do you have any favorite books?
I read a lot of the startups and the entrepreneurial books. But I haven't made a lot of time to sit there and read these things. So what I've actually been spending a lot of time doing is listening to podcasts. And I think I could sit on the bus on my way home, or I can sit on the train and I can just kind of zone out and listen to this piece of podcast and learn a very valuable lesson. And I've listened to a lot of audiobooks as well, which is kind of the same. One of my favorite books was Founders at Work. I really enjoyed as a book, because I lived in the internet in 95, 96, and I went through some of these stories of how incredibly hard it was for these founders to actually make it, which is, I guess, inspirational in a sense. When I'm going through some sort of rough time, just knowing that other people had a rough time was really helpful.
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained one ability, what would it be?
What I really admire from really great entrepreneurs is their ability to tell a really interesting story. And they've used this power in many different ways. It's in fundraising. It's in recruiting their team. It's in sales. And for some weird reason, they have this ability through storytelling to make a lot of stuff happen when they have absolutely or even close to nothing. So it might be recruiting your initial founding team and they're willing to go months on end with no salary or anything like that. It may be able to raise millions of dollars with no product, no code, and all purely on vision. I think that's an extraordinary ability, because by being able to tell that story of where you can get to in 2 or 3 years, you get buy-in in the initial days to actually make that happen. The key thing is they're able to execute against that as well, which I find incredibly impressive. As a very logical engineer, I find it kind of hard for me to do that, because in terms of technology, I can see what's going to be possible in the next 3 months. And so I would say I kind of lack that ability to tell that story of what can happen and building this community around that. And I find it really interesting, because the people that can do that, they make a lot of stuff happen. They build a lot of momentum in a very short amount of time. And then when they're able to do that, everyone wants to pile in, right? Because they want to be part of something successful in the early days. And having that social proof, it really helps leapfrog that.
Yeah.
I love it.
Cool. All right. Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah. Thanks so much for making the time. And then. Sorry, it took 2 hours before we even started.
No, thank you. That was fun. It just felt like a conversation.
Yeah, well, it was a conversation, I guess.
Yeah, true that, true that.
Cool. Podcast over.
And so here ends the interview part of the show. And thanks a lot to Sherman for sharing such a wealth of good information and generally being a nice guy. And now we move on to my top tips. So, number one. I forgot what my top tips are. Oh yeah. Number one, someone else is better than you at something. So it's good to have people around to share the effort with, and you're probably not the best at doing anything, and there's always someone that's better than you. So when you're starting a business, try and find a founder or someone to help you on the things that you're bad at. And when you're trying to grow a business, don't try and take ownership of every single little thing, because that's just silly. Number two, sink or swim. Putting yourself in a difficult situation really brings the best out in you. Like not having any money and being afraid of how to put food on the table made Sherman actually deal with his demons and learn how to become a good salesman. He was just completely scared of it beforehand. So just put yourself out there and you'll improve so much faster than if you always play it safe. Number three, mums are awesome. They have lots of shit to deal with. Thank them or give them cards and flowers and things and make sure they know that they're being appreciated. And now onto books. Sherman recommends Founders at Work, Stories of Startups Early Days by Jessica Livingston. This looks like a really interesting read. It's basically a summary of loads of really interesting founders and the story behind how they started their business. So people like Steve Wozniak at Apple and founder of Flickr, founder of like Lotus Cars, PayPal, Hotmail. And each chapter is just a new person and it's just like lots of small interesting stories. So yeah, I'm sure you will all enjoy that. You've listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to reach out, I'd love to talk to you.
on Twitter. I am at Sam Harris Tweets, or Instagram Sam Jam Snaps. Show notes, along with links to everything that we discuss, are available at growthmindsetpodcast.com, along with information on how to get involved and blog posts on cool things that you should be aware of.
Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy your next podcast.